Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Indistinguishable from Magic Podcast with Rafal Loes and Chris Abramson. Chris and Rafal have learned not to take themselves too seriously. Fortunately, they take their profession seriously. This podcast features no-nonsense analysis, seeded with humor, in a way that lets us all laugh at ourselves, while we try to address some of the tough issues in security. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
What's up, friends? Welcome to Indistinguishable from Magic, the podcast that takes its name from the Arthur C. Clarke quote, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." Buckle in, because we're not handing out participation trophies, but you know we're going to call some bullshit. My name is Rafal Loes, and joining me is my equally grumpy co-host, Mr. Chris Abramson, and we like to think of ourselves as the Statler and Waldorf of cybersecurity, because, face it, the InfoSec Goat Rodeo could use a couple of clowns. So drinks in hand, let's go.
All right, and welcome. It is indistinguishable from magic. I don't know, Chris, I think this is like episode 7 or something.
I think we might be 8. No, 7. I think seven? You're right. 7. Yeah. We went on hiatus. We went on hiatus for the holidays. We had to do our day job.
We took some time off. We came back. We've got drinks in hand. Listen, you can't blame me for not knowing what today is. But it is January 17th as we record this, and all kidding aside, we are recording this just 3 days before we inaugurate a new president, and God help us knows what's going to happen after that. So this may be the last episode we ever record, Chris.
You know what? Drinks in hand. Let's dig into this topic, because I think the one we have tonight's a pretty good one.
Wait a minute.
I'm jumping the gun. So tonight, I'm going local, Chicago Distillery, Koval. I am doing their single barrel rye, on the rocks, because I needed a little bit of something to take the edge off of it a little bit. So I'm doing on the rocks, not neat.
Okay. Well, I'm as you requested. I had imparted. I had bought a bottle of George Remus, the King of the Bootleggers, and I popped that today, and here it is, and it is a tasty whiskey. It's good. It's good stuff. I definitely recommend it if you want to try something a little 47% or for 94 proof. It is it's a little bitey.
Yeah.
Pretty tasty though.
So, cheers. Anyway,
cheers. Cheers, folks. Job done.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a Christmas present over the break. Two bottles of High West showed up at my house. They're Rendezvous Rye and a bottle of the Double Rye. Those are like straight from, I think they're straight from the distillery. But yeah, they're sitting on the shelf right now. I'm not cracking those. I got one more I'm going to crack before those get opened up. So
that's nice. I found a bottle of Campfire while I was up north for Christmas, or sorry, for New Year's. And, I found some High West. I had not had a bottle of Rendezvous Rye. You'll have to tell me how that is, but,
I will.
Anyway,
that one, I haven't had that. That's one that I haven't had. So
no, we'll give it a shot. All right. Well, folks, you know, you're eventually going to do this, but we waited the requisite number of days, weeks, months.
Yep.
I don't know. It's been a while, but let's talk SolarWinds. there was an article that somebody posted up on I feel like I need that sloth from the Croods. So the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, because everybody's wondering when the apocalypse is actually going to happen after this one. So,
dude, I'm sorry, but we've had the apocalypse. Nobody's noticed yet. I think we've had it like three times, and I don't think anybody's been told. But
yeah,
that said, so the Wall Street Journal has an article. You can go look it up. I'll even post it somehow into the. I'll figure out how to put it in the show notes. But it was entitled "Solar Hack for Solar Winds Hack Forces Reckoning with Security or Supply Chain Security." Sorry, "Solar Winds Hack Forces Reckoning with Supply Chain Security." Now. It makes a couple of interesting points, and the writer David Bertie and Kim Nash did a fairly good job of leaving the hype out of these. But I found something interesting. So if we dissect this, the first thing that hits me is second paragraph, of course, literally third sentence. It says, after looking in recent weeks to assess their exposure, businesses have turned to probing other vendors' security, reevaluating vetting processes for partners, and even pausing updates to applications, executives say. I'm going to ask the obvious question, and I want your take on this, Chris, because I know what my answer is. But okay, we're going to talk about reevaluating the vetting process. How? What would you do differently? It's not like how? What? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, man. Did you just get goosed? What the hell, dude? What was that?
It's because it's, you know, we're gonna, it talks about this. They're gonna, you know, the people are gonna have to go reevaluate their vendor vetting process. And okay, reevaluate it, but what would that do in this case? Like, how does looking at SolarWinds differently? What could you possibly have done differently?
I don't think there's anything any company in this day and age that still follows any amount of a vendor security, vendor management, whatever you want to call it, program, that they could have done differently. Because the reality is what we do hasn't changed. We don't dig deep into the overall process. I mean, and let's be honest, there's no company out there that's got the time, money, resources to dig that deep. They don't have that kind of time, money, and resources to dig that deep into somebody else's program. I mean, if you look at your own company, you and I have been doing this for a while. You know, you go through internal audits, you go through, if you're a retail company, you take credit card data. This is a mainstay. Like, this is like flat. This is like right in the requirements of the PCI rec. Okay. HITRUST has mandated it for healthcare companies because of the nature of privacy data that's involved with healthcare. But you're spending all your time, money, and resources trying to get your own program, you know, your own stuff under control, your own security controls under control. The reality is that this particular line item in there doesn't always get quite the amount of effort, time, resource, you know, tied to it that it probably needs. But even then, if it did, the reality is who's going to share what's going on inside their own house?
Well, okay. A couple of problems I have with the statement of going to reevaluate how we vet vendors. I understand that there's some sense of urgency, as there is after every breach, because then we just go, oh my God, we need to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, you know, after, I'm sorry, folks, for using this analogy if you take this personally, but like after every school shooting, we say, we must do something. And then a bunch of politicians get together and there's a lot of hand waving and there's a lot of, you know, posturing and not a damn thing happens. Okay. And forgive my indignation, but, you know, this is the exact same thing we're going. There's a lot of hand wringing. There's a lot of posturing. There's a lot of people issuing strongly worded statements. But ultimately, even for a mid-sized company, you've got, what, between 50 and 100 third parties? What are you going to do? Go send, you know, your security analysts to them all? Because, you know, both of your security analysts have time? Come on. Like, what are you going to do? What I want to know is, what are you going to do differently? This whole notion of, we must do something differently. Give me a specific. Tell me something you're going to do differently, and I can't think of a damn thing.
Yeah, I you know... Well, you and I talked offline about this, and the real, not to the third party topic, but the SolarWinds topic. And, you know, I don't think we're actually going to know the real impact of this until probably a year, maybe two from now, possibly even more. Depends. It depends on how long they, the sleepers want to lay low for, you know, the security conspiracy theorist junkies out there. We don't know how long they're going to lay low. We don't know how long data is going to sit somewhere before it gets pushed out into the public eye. But in the here and now, and the fact that we know that something happened, and it happened through a supply chain mechanism of software, the question now becomes, what do you do? Do you ask all of your software vendors to certify and validate all of their software 100%? Well,
SolarWinds said, no, we don't.
Wow.
What were you send that questionnaire to SolarWinds? And in retrospective, like, you sent that questionnaire to them and they would go, yeah, no, we don't care about it. We just throw random stuff in. It's all cool. Like, what would they have said that would have triggered you to go, oh my gosh, Will Robinson that nobody else caught for 2+ years?
Nothing. Nothing. You and I both know nothing. That, like, every, and I personally like to believe that every software vendor does their damn near their best to protect their code. You know, they have security mechanisms around it. They sign it, they validate it, they go through, you know, copious amounts of changes. And for the most part, everybody's trying to do their best to make sure that nobody gets into their supply chain, which is their software development lifecycle and such. But when you talk about the vendor vetting process, some security analyst or some IA person inside of the company is going to check the box that says, yeah, we have a process. We have this, we have that. Yes, it's all good. Nothing changes about the vendor vetting process. And that's the part that hurts. That's the part that we still fundamentally haven't figured out how to get comfortable with in some way, shape, or form.
Well, here's the trick, right? If you're a third party, you can't, there are very few situations where you're going to be able to do anything physically invasive, we'll call it, into that from a verification perspective. Beyond that, you're stuck with questionnaires. And again, I ask you, what would you have done differently? How is the vetting process? Like, it's easy to write, yes, things are going to change now. Give me something concrete and specific. You can't, because nothing is going to change. That's exactly the thing. Nothing is going to change.
Want to hear my theory? Here's my theory.
I always want to hear your theory.
I think that we're going to have to throw out the questionnaire process 100%.
In favor of what?
I think that we're going to have to go to some amount of vetting process that's outside of the control of each individual company.
Okay, so a third party that assesses all your third parties and aggregates them somehow. I mean, those companies exist today, right? It's like BitSight or BitGlass.
You get BitSight and you get Security Scorecard and you got some of these companies. You got those types of companies that I think they're still catering to the individual businesses. They're still catering to I run my program internally and I've got to do some amount of vetting on a company. So let me run some amount of open source intelligence on, you know, get some OPSEC on these guys and try to understand what's going on with them. And then I can rank them. And which ones do I go after? Which ones do I, you know, who do I talk to? Who's not? Basically, it's, you know, profiling them. Oh, God, I hate using that word, profiling them. That's in this day and age, that just seems so wrong. Essentially you're profiling them and you're saying, hey, I'm going to go talk with these guys here and these guys here. What I'm saying though is I think you actually have to step outside of the realm of running the program internally, and the companies have to allow, I'll pick one off the top of my head, but you know, IBM, I'm sure they have, you know, a program. where they go and vet vendors for other customers and stuff. You're going to have to let these companies come in and basically go under the rug, dig deep. I mean, let them literally pull apart your security program and your software development lifecycle and your hardware and infrastructure programs and look for the holes. I mean,
can you imagine the cost, Chris?
Oh, I didn't say it was going to be cheap. I just said this is what's going to happen if you don't. If you want no risk in that software development lifecycle process and no risk in that supply chain methodology of software, something's got to change.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't know about
and we're talking about zero risk. Now, yeah, as I say, no company goes in zero risk. Everybody takes a certain amount of risk, okay? Yeah. Everybody's willing to play the 70-30, 60-40, 80-20 game, okay? And that's there's a certain amount of cost of doing business and things of that nature. Frankly, I think there's going to be a pretty hefty price tag at the end of the day when we find out what really happened with this and what really got out into the public. I think there's going to be one hell of a long game here on this one in particular. This wasn't somebody just going after credit card numbers. This wasn't somebody just doing the random drive-by ransomware attack. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
There was a long game in this one.
They threw around the phrase turning point several times in that article. And I mean, maybe, but we also thought Sony was the turning point and choice point before that. And then after that, Equifax, and then
I don't think there's really turning points here. I think they're reflection points for companies, because with each one of these that happens, we get a little bit better, they get a little bit better, we get a little bit better. I mean, but that seems to be the nature of how this game plays out for us.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is a better vendor security management program out of this the thing that gets better?
But
I don't know.
I've been the vendor and I've been the buyer in this particular question and in this particular line of business. And I've both vetted third parties on behalf of a, we'll say, multinational, Fortune 3 company. And then I've also been, I wrote a third party risk management program framework doc. I wrote the blueprint for it when I was at Optiv. My team put that together. We did the research behind it. What does it take to run a successful third-party risk management program? And how do you define success? And overwhelmingly, north of 85% of the instances I've been a part of or I've talked to or I've witnessed, it really is. That feels right. Like finger in the air. Right?
Yeah, finger in the air. Lick it. Finger in the air. Yeah. Yeah.
But look, let's split the market up in two. Let's look at the enterprises. The enterprises, they have the arguably the financial and technical and human capital means, but they do not have the scale, because at the rate that General Electric, for example, or an HP or a, pick a company, General Dynamics, any of those, at the rate that they bring in third parties, that there is your chance of doing, evaluating, quote, all of them. I laugh at you. Your chance of understanding which ones are high priority versus low priority. I wish you luck, because I know that Target had the same problem, right? We know what's high priority, like the HVAC system, not a high priority, doesn't touch anything wrong. And it all goes back, I feel like this all kind of collapses back to, we don't really understand where our critical data lives or how it travels between our systems or even what it is. So we're going to have to continue to design more and more intricate and complex and convoluted and expensive systems and tools and processes and programs around help and making sure that others can't like interact negatively with it when we ourselves don't really understand it, what in the F it is or where it is or what it looks like or what it does or what we collect or who's supposed to touch it.
So wait a minute. So are you saying that this is our own personal hygiene issue inside our own, in our own house?
To quote the ref, as I'm watching the Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat the Saints, touchdown.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree in the respect that if we don't understand our own house, how can we be throwing stones at somebody else's house?
It becomes really difficult. Yeah. I mean, that's the end of the day. Yep. It becomes exceptionally difficult. Let me ask you, Chris, what do you think happens when we get into this, like, we must do something, and that gets into a boardroom situation? Because you're closer to that than I am right now. What is any conversation even look at the leadership level with security leadership? Nico, what do you need?
Honestly, I think if you're a CISO right now, I guarantee you the moment the news broke, any CISO that was, you know, in this situation got a call from the CEO right away. They got a call. I don't care what size company you are. If the head of IT, you know, and you own the security piece, you know, you're a CISO, whatever it is, you got a call the moment the news broke. Okay. And you are up for the next 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours explaining, you know, basically what you read in the news, probably the same article that the CEO read to him, and going, we've got to understand what's going on. We've got to do what we got to do our own investigations, analysis. What, you know, are we even running the software internally? Are we impacted by this? I guarantee you that played out in a lot of companies across probably the world, because I'm guessing this software was run in a lot of places. Okay. That exact scenario played out everywhere. Okay. And don't believe me, go talk to you. If you're in the IT industry, go talk to your CISO, ask them that. And I guarantee you they'll say, yeah. At which next, when the next board meeting rolls up, you can almost guarantee that discussion was had at the next board meeting, where the board was talking to the CISO and CIO and everybody, and doing the I'm going to say maybe top three questions. Are we impacted? Did we lose any data? What are we doing to fix the issue? Those are the top three questions right there by the board. I might be paraphrasing a little bit, but those were the top three questions. I guarantee you. Okay.
You know what? I've been thinking about you talking, Chris, while you're talking. I've been thinking about this, and you know what I think finally changes? Maybe this time. We start to take inventory of vendors more seriously. Maybe.
I for the companies that are doing it, that are taking inventory right now, they're just going to get better at it. They're going to improve. For the companies that were half-heartedly doing it, everybody's going to move an inch to the left. Okay. And they're, no pun intended. They're going to move an inch to the left, and they're going to go, what can I do a little bit better? If I throw a little bit more money at it, if I throw a few more people at it, what more can I get better? But that's what's going to happen, is it's all going to move an inch to the left. Okay. The companies that could come out of this saying, we don't run that, it's not here, we're good, flat. Your program will continue on the way it is. Guaranteed. you will move on with life and things will be hunky dory. But the companies that believe they had an impact, everything will shift to the left just an inch. Okay. That's what I think will immediately come out of this, because we have to show that we reacted to the situation. Something was done. We did the research, the analysis, the investigation to help set people's minds at ease about what's going on inside our own house. But now we got to come back to the question of, did that change the way we treat the rest of these entities that we do business with? Does it change the way we interact with them and what we ask them and the questionnaire and all the other stuff? And the reality is probably not. Like maybe you added two more questions to that ISO 27001 program that you have, or you took away, you know, three of the HR questions, and you added, you know, six software development lifecycle questions in this next round.
But that's about it.
That's the fundamental change. Yeah, that's about it. That's the fundamental change. I think you'll see. Again, this, I think strategically, this is what would be mind-boggling. Okay. Is we're about to see a new president roll into the house here shortly. I think like something like a little over 24 hours and yeah, something like that. And, or no, 3 days. That's right. I'm sorry. 3 days. Yeah. 20th, right? Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. And a different party, different mindset, lot of regulation. I wouldn't be shocked if there's a federal intervention on this one, because the impact might have hit the federal government a little hard.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't know. I keep shaking my head because.
Well, because you and I both know there's really nothing. There's nothing in this realm that from a business perspective, from a company-wide business perspective, you and I both know, unless you're willing to throw, you know, 10 or 12, 20, $30 million at your program and really like hammer your vendors, there's not much else you can do. There's nothing that you can fundamentally change about your vendor security program that is going to shift the needle. It might shift the needle a little bit. You never know, but it isn't going to fundamentally shift the needle that I think is going to change the fact that you're not going to find something like what happened with SolarWinds. I mean, if we believe everything that we've read, and God help me, I don't want to be the guy that we just talked about a couple episodes ago about the ambulance chasers, I'm going to play the armchair quarterback after the fact of all this happening, and we're reading what's in the media and the pundit stuff. But if you read what happened and you take it at face value of what it is, and you think you know what happened, of course, none of us knows what happened. None of us knows how, the what, the why, whatever.
Yeah.
But are we going to fundamentally figure out that, like, man, had I asked question number 32, I would have figured out the problem and SolarWinds wouldn't have happened. They would have fixed their program.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I think, listen, this is one of those scenarios, in my opinion, and I know, you know, just a little bit more than most common people in this, because I've got lots of interesting, you know, interesting circles I get information from. So I think that once we know more, once more becomes public, what a lot of the punditry, a lot of the media, and a lot of the, you know, talking heads are going to realize is that this is simply one of those situations where, you know, you've got the three categories of attackers: the bored, you know, kid from, you know, that just learned how to hack, but got downloaded some tools and went and had some fun.
Hey, look, I found this neat website.
Yeah, right. The criminal, the common criminal that does things for, you mm-hmm. know, that tries hard, but ultimately isn't going to try to get themselves killed.
Organized crime. And, organized.
Right. Yep. And then you've got like that 0.1% at the top. This is it. This is that 1.1% at the top, because our best and brightest missed it. Literally everybody missed it, from our FedGov to the best DFIR companies in the world to literally everybody else. Okay. And do we put too much trust in software we buy? Yeah, probably. Do we have a better alternative? I'm going to tell you, no, not right now. We don't. I mean, zero trust is definitely something we should be doing. But what happens when yep. when the trust was misplaced? It wasn't misplaced. We have a system that was there to monitor and manage our infrastructure. How would mm-hmm. you treat that differently? What are you going to do? Put it on its own separate segment? No, because you can't.
Yeah, this is the scenario. This is the scenario. You know the scenario I'm talking about. This is it. Mm-hmm. This is the one that we all kind of cringe and go, "Oh crap." And the reality is now we have to start walking backwards from it and figuring out, you know, where, when, and how we have to start fixing things and changing our monitoring. But I think you're right. At the end of the day, it still ends up inside us, inside our own companies. Yeah. How's your IR program? How are you monitoring what goes in and out of that firewall? Are you blocking? Are you segmenting your networks in a way that makes sense? Are you, is your authentication up to snuff? And, you know, as much as people give me grief or tell me, God, there's so many passwords, there's so, you know, this, that, the other, blah, 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 I go, yeah, but just realize that ID and password is still the last, like, it's the first and last thing that prevents somebody from playing in your network. We can wrap so many controls around things. And I'm not saying that the stuff we wrap around our environments is bad. There's a lot of stuff that's good. There's a lot of things that we should be doing. There's a lot of stuff we should be testing. Phone scanning, pen testing, all that stuff's good. It's all good things to do. But man, that ID and password, that the privilege and the authorization that you have into an environment, man, that's it. It's not going to change. Biometrics won't change it. Something newfangled isn't going to change it. Not until we fundamentally, if you want to get somewhat, you know, futuristic here, unless somebody microchips every person on the planet and you have your own ID number, God forbid.
Man, that's probably not too far away.
that ID and password is the saving grace of what lets you in and out of an environment, and that's what also keeps the other people out. So,
well, that was the last of the good juice, and at the risk of flogging a dead horse here,
I know we've beat this one.
This one go, but look, I look if you're listening and you've got and you've done anything but go, yeah, I agree. I would love to hear it on LinkedIn, on Twitter. I would love to hear the alternative. I want to know that maybe there's a way to do it anonymously if you're doing something truly innovative and your company will fire you for telling us. But I'm curious. What do you do differently?
I'd like to know if somebody actually changed their security vendor program because of this. Again, to Raph's point, if you can't. We understand, you know, we get it. If we got to read between the lines, whatever, but if you can, and you can share, and you know, you don't have to do it publicly. You want to do it privately and hit one of us up. I would love it. I'd love to know if somebody actually changed their vendor program to address this.
Yeah.
I'm really curious on that one, because I think at best Everybody shifted an inch left, changed it around. Questions changed. A couple of this, that kind of things changed. But I'm going to guess that for the most part, didn't have much of an effect on the vendor program.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's this one. Independent thinking at its finest. And indistinguishable from magic. That's another episode down. Thanks for listening. Thanks for having us aboard. Thanks for joining, Chris. And I will give you the last word.
I don't know if I can just do one last word on this one, man. I think this one is guard yourself. It's if you put the two together, it's one word. Guard yourself.
Just this one time. Let you have
this
that.
One time. This one time.
All right. Thanks for listening, you guys. We'll catch you later. This has been Raph and Chris, Indistinguishable from Magic, the School of Independent Thought, and Punditry, coming at you live. Drink in hand. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Indistinguishable from Magic podcast with Raphael Lohse and Chris Abramson. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.